Beginning. Esoteric Astrology Adventure 87, Section C, page 280. Okay, we begin. So, reading this again. There is another point in connection with the planetary influences which I would like to mention here because it emphasizes again the synthetic position of Virgo. Synthetic. It synthesizes all material factors, but remember again, it's an M sign. So in a way, synthetic because the three aspects of divinity are all mentioned in the longer mantra. Not just Christ in you, the hope of glory, which speaks about the glorification of the second aspect through matter, but rather, I am the mother and the child, I God, mother, child, God, aspect 3, 2, 1. Thus synthetic, and as it brings in majorly the second ray now, it has the indigo ray associated with it, more of the synthetic indigo ray enters through Virgo at this time, in this world period, at this time at least, than through any other of the signs. At least, I suppose, with respect to humanity and perhaps the solar system. So I would like to mention here, because it emphasizes again the synthetic position of Virgo. Think about the synthesizing seventh ray coming into the new age, already with us now, and its relation to the factor of synthesis. Both Virgo bringing in certainly material synthesis and also soul and personality merged. We forget for a moment about the first aspect. And the seventh ray also bringing about a material synthesis, yes, but yet the highest and the lowest meet, the first and the seventh ray. The first ray implied in the synthesis that the seventh ray offers. So I would like to here mention it because of the synthetic position of Virgo and its contribution as a major focal point for the distribution of energy to the fourth creative hierarchy. Now, Virgo does stand for the subtle soul emerging and blending with the personality. So, you know, the two crosses are here. The mutable cross and the fixed cross are both here. Two solar systems and two crosses. Sorry, operating through Virgo, through its blending of the second with the third aspect of divinity. So we are Mercury, we human beings. Virgo is very strongly Mercury, being its orthodox ruler and yet its exalted ruler, and you know how powerful a planet in exaltation is in relation to its constellation or sign. So this is giving us increased soul power, but even more so the power to blend soul and form. Let's just say Virgo is conferring upon humanity the power to blend soul and form. Jupiter, now we're going to go to another ruler, Jupiter rules four signs. And each of them represents a different element out of the four elements, which are expressing themselves in the three worlds of human evolution. Well, there are other elements, aren't there? You know, there's probably aether and akasha and still something else. Probably seven elements, but four of them, fire, earth, in order, earth, water, fire, air, are expressing in the worlds of human evolution, the other ones beyond. The following tabulation will make this somewhat clearer. So here we have Jupiter in its four elemental expressions. And I'd like to spread this out just a little bit, if I could. So, water, fire, air. And let's see, I should spread it out even more if possible. If possible. Without running into... All right, maybe that'll work. So Virgo, Pisces, Sagittarius, and Aquarius. In Virgo, the hierarchical ruler, in Pisces and Sagittarius, the orthodox ruler, that is Jupiter is, and Aquarius, the esoteric ruler, but he is offering them in ascending order, beginning with the lowest plane, and not according to the advance of rulerships. He begins with hierarchical, ends with esoteric, but he does begin with the lowest plane, which is earth. He proceeds to the astral plane, water. He goes to the mental plane, fire. Then he goes to the buddhic plane, air. So Jupiter is the hierarchical ruler of Virgo, an earth sign. Jupiter is the exoteric ruler of Pisces, a water sign. Jupiter is the exoteric ruler of Sagittarius, a fire sign. And Jupiter is the esoteric ruler of Aquarius, an air sign. And what are the... In what way is the Jupiter influence veiled? Well, in Virgo, we're well acquainted with the idea that we're dealing with the hidden Christ, gradually to be germinated, grown, and finally revealed. In Pisces, Jupiter, a planet of growth, constant expansion of consciousness, will grow towards becoming the full Savior, but at first is the hidden Savior. The Sagittarius, interesting here, Jupiter is said to be the hidden master. We know the directing, controlling, guiding influence of Sagittarius. The master is the controller of the gate, in a way, the director of the one who allows entry through the gate. And here Jupiter will grow towards full servership, and at first is the hidden server. Virgo, of course, the Christ energy, Pisces, the saving energy, Sagittarius, the directing energy, and Aquarius, the serving energy. These are the functions of Jupiter. Now, why hidden? And I suppose it just has to do with growth and development. Jupiter is the ruler and conveyor of expansion, so hidden until sufficiently expanded to emerge into the light. There comes a time when the hidden Christ becomes the manifested Christ, the hidden Savior, the glorified emerging Savior, the hidden Master, which all of us are in a certain sense, and as our consciousness grows, we become eventually the Master, and all of us potentially the world server, and as our consciousness grows, the day will come when we are that. So Jupiter, the hierarchical ruler of Virgo, giving in a way the full expansion of the Christ energy, or one of those signs in which the full expansion occurs. Maybe Pisces is another. Jupiter is found growing until emergence occurs, or promoting growth. So in this sign, Virgo, the place and the mode of expression of the planets are of paramount interest, though most esoteric in implication and most difficult to understand. So DK tells us they're difficult to understand. Our superficial assessments are not going to get to the bottom of what's really being implied. Paramount interest. Let's see why he may say this. In this sign, Virgo, the place and the mode of expression of the planets are of paramount interest, though most esoteric, far away from the affairs of the personality, let us say, most esoteric in implication and most difficult to understand. So let's see. Mercury is exalted in this sign, and this is a kind of an exaltation we don't normally receive in the teaching of exoteric astrology. Mercury is exalted in this sign because the mother is necessarily ruled by her son. In this case, rulership can mean so many things, you know, influence, conditioning, but here it means dominated, really. Let's say rulership means many things, as I've been trying to explain. The mother is ruled by her son, so the one in the position of rulership is lifted up or exalted. The son of mine, who is also the son of God. So here, this is the identification of Mercury with the Christ aspect. Of this son, she is the protector and is responsible for his development, and slowly, slowly, over millions of years, his slowly acquired experience. The personality ensures that the inner consciousness will be subjected to the needed experiences. The personality assures that the growing inner consciousness will be subjected to the necessary experiences. Mercury, being the messenger of the gods and the agent of their applied control, the method by which their energies reach man and control man, interesting here, the agent of their applied control, is therefore the agent of the third aspect, active intelligence, from one point of view. I think that is the personal and also the ultimate monadic. And of the second aspect, love wisdom, from another point of view, from his soul ray perspective. So Mercury works in the lower worlds as the conduit of the applied control through adaptation. Mercury is the adept in many ways. Applied control through adaptation of these greater deities. So he is the agent of the third aspect, with which he is deeply identified, and of the second aspect from another point of view. He is shuttling, in a way, between the second aspect and the third, but also, in a way, between a still higher aspect and the second and third. In other words, the gods are identified with the first aspect, and Mercury is still conveying messages, because the Antikorana is operative in the cosmic etheric worlds, conveying the messages of the first aspect of divinity, which the gods represent. So he is regarded as embodying in himself both these aspects of the mental principle, the third and the second, and the expression of the concrete and the abstract mind of God as well as the Son of Mind. Son of Mind. The lower concrete mind was unfolded in the first solar system, and I suppose by those human beings who were individualized in that system and who are the remnant or the failures and have made their way into our solar system. The lower concrete mind was unfolded in the first solar system, and the higher abstract intuitional mind, he's combining two things, abstract and intuitional, the pure reason, is unfolding in this system. Well, Virgo was much more concrete in the first solar system and more aligned with intuition and pure reason in this solar system. The previous solar system, Mercury was more, Mercury was more concrete, and so was Virgo. In this solar system, Mercury has higher potentials, and so does Virgo. So notice that abstract and intuition are not the same, though they are both aspects of the spiritual triad. Okay. Mercury is the synthesis of Manas Buddhi. Mercury rules the bridge of the Antikarana. So much is being told about Mercury here, very strong. In Virgo, Mercury reaches his full power. Now, what is the implication? Because an orthodox ruler, an exoteric ruler, does not reach full power in a sign. But an exalted, you know what I'm saying here, right? Exalted planet does reach full power. So it's as if the sun reaches full power in Aries, the moon reaches full power in Taurus, nothing in Gemini, Jupiter reaches full power in Cancer, nothing in Leo, Mercury reaches full power in Virgo, Saturn reaches full power in Libra, Uranus reaches full power in Scorpio, nothing in Sagittarius, Mars reaches full power in Capricorn, nothing in Aquarius, and Venus reaches full power in Pisces. Full power. The power of the exaltations is really to be reckoned with. It is a kind of a super rulership of a sign. The exalted planet rules in a superior way the sign with which it is engaged, as I've just tried to communicate. So in Virgo, Mercury reaches his full power. Virgo is intelligence in one respect, and the hidden Christ is wisdom and pure reason. So in this particular case, the exaltation means full power. And Virgo is the intelligence part, and Mercury here is the Christ, wisdom, pure reason, intuition, a high function of Mercury. Probably in the previous solar system, as I said, Mercury was much more concrete, and Virgo much more concrete. We're told how much in advance of what it used to be Virgo is in this solar system, same with Cancer, how much in advance of what it used to be the lord of the constellation Cancer is now expressing in this solar system. Interestingly, the rulers of Cancer are also hard, a soft line rays, just like Virgo. The mother aspect, you know, the triangle of the mother aspect we've just been dealing with. So are, I believe they were Cancer, Virgo, and Pisces, as I recall, that triangle, when compared with Leo, Libra, and Capricorn. And in this mother triangle, the only hardline ray coming in as a ruler is first ray Pluto in Pisces. But with, again, Jupiter second ray and Neptune esoterically and encompassingly associated with Pisces as the sixth ray, expressing the sixth ray. So many soft line rays showing somehow a movement of these two constellations identified with the mother aspect towards the sun aspect. So these are the esoteric reasons for the exaltation of Mercury in Virgo. Rather a long paragraph, but having to do with the rising power of Mercury as it displays a greater form of expression in alliance with the Son of God, rather than being as the representative purely of the intelligence aspect. Now the day will come, I think, when the inner nature of Mercury will be revealed as essentially intelligence, probably with a fifth ray, third ray monad is my guess. Whereas the inner nature of Venus will be revealed otherwise, along the sixth ray secondary line, even though its expression is a hard line expression now along the fifth ray, and Mercury's soul-wise is a soft line ray expression. Venus, which is pure love wisdom, beautiful way of describing that, because you could hardly say that a fifth ray planet, fifth ray in terms of its soul, could be considered pure love wisdom. But from its monadic perspective, I believe the sixth ray, DK establishes that, and the inference that all monadic rays must eventually be the first, second, or third, no matter what they are in a subsidiary sense. So I choose the second for Venus. From there, we can decide, or we can perhaps realize that pure love wisdom does apply to what Venus essentially is. Venus, pure love wisdom, falls into generation. It's kind of like the division of the sexes in a way. It's as if the soul, which, extends itself or reproduces itself through emanation, falls into a condition prevalent in the lower worlds where reproduction occurs through generation. And a much lower form of self-reproduction. Venus, pure love wisdom, falls into generation in this sign and occultly descends to Earth. In other words, it enters the lower planes, the lower 18 subplanes, and the spark of mind which Venus imparts through its representatives, the solar angels, imparts to man is even anchored in the brain. So although the main locus of the soul's expression is on the higher mental plane, aspects of it descend as low as the densest level of the physical plane. And Venus cannot express its love and wisdom in a purely material situation, but with Virgo moving increasingly towards the second ray line and becoming more and more an expression of love wisdom, Venus's fall will gradually be rewarded through the power to express through the transformed lower material which Virgo has helped purify. So it falls into generation in this sign and occultly descends to Earth and stands, as the secret doctrine has so carefully pointed out, for the gift of mind and of divinity, because it's not just the spark of mind, it's the spark of mind, love, will, really, the gift of mind and of divinity embodied in the Son of Mind, and thus for the descent of the Christ principle into generation or into matter. So this fall has a very high sacrificial meaning. It's not like some bad thing, you know, the angels were sinful, so they fell. The fall is an act of sacrifice, a descent of the hearts of fiery love, related to Venus, the descent of the solar angels, into the dense physical vehicle of the solar logos, first to form a causal body, and then a kind of extended descent even lower, so that the permanent atoms are influenced by the solar angel and the spark of mind is anchored in the 18 lower subplanes, on the highest of the 18 lower subplanes, and there is also an anchorage in the head, etheric and physical brain. This is a real sacrifice in the Saturnian sense. Let's look at that. A real sacrifice in the Saturnian sense, because mobility, extent, sensitivity, consciousness are all being limited by this task, which requires the solar angel to remain at its post, just the way Sanat Kumara is self-obliged to remain at his post. Sanat Kumara, the great sacrifice, the solar angels, lesser sacrifices along that line, a planetary logos, a dragon of wisdom, a master of the wisdom, a lesser dragon of wisdom. So all these beings have their prototypes, their models. And Sanat Kumara, in a way, is a great model for the solar angels. Okay. Virgo and Venus are together two aspects of intelligence. If you look at it, Virgo seems more related to the third ray, the third aspect, pure and simple, and Venus, well, it's the union of heart and mind, but Venus is expressing the fifth ray, so the fifth and the third ray go together. I suppose Venus and Virgo, under certain circumstances and certain charts, could represent keen intelligence, or intelligence in matter, or intelligent love in matter. The symbolism of the descent of spirit into the womb of the Virgin Mother is preserved for us in the astrological fact that Venus falls in this sign. I mean, what a very different transpersonal, impersonal interpretation this is. You know, usually this is interpreted in terms of someone's love life, or whether they're warm or cold, or can express their affections and all that sort of thing. You know, which can be valuable discussion in terms for certain people whose consciousness is there. But if you want to think of yourself as part of a larger spiritual process, then what the Tibetan is telling us here about the descent of our inner guide into dense matter, so that the human consciousness can be reared and lifted up towards the fifth kingdom, this becomes important. So a great sacrifice is here involved. And for a portion of the solar angel, at least, powers are reduced. An attentiveness in time is required. The possibility of certain expansions is probably curtailed, although an aspect of the solar angel does remain in the cosmic ethers, I think, and carrying on its own business, which the Tibetan advises, that let it do that. Don't always be importuning your angel. They have their own things to deal with. But sacrifice is involved. Having pervaded the entire universe of lower man with a fragment of itself, the solar angel remains. So the fall of Venus has to do with the descent of a higher energy into the field of a lower energy for the sake of redeeming that energy with the sacrifice of curtailed expression at first in the lower field, until the Virgin Mother really begins to respond to the second ray energy. See, it says Virgo and Venus are together two aspects of intelligence. Well, it might as well say, or it could also say, that Virgo and Venus are two aspects of love, wisdom. It could say. Because we know they both have a strong second ray identification as well as a third aspect identification. So that's something about the fall of Venus in this sign. You can count on the Tibetan to take the spiritual approach and to try to lift our interpretive gaze above the strictly personal, which would have mostly to do with the clockwise wheel, when we are to be treading the counterclockwise wheel, however much the clockwise wheel is still turning within our substance. Esoterically, and you know, we're talking about she here, he uses the word she, probably referring to the idea that Venus is in a feminine incarnation at this time, while the Earth is in a masculine incarnation. Imagine Mother Earth in a masculine incarnation. There's so many conventional ideas out there, which people regard as relatively new, which are very incomplete in terms of the occult perspective. But esoterically, she disappears from view and vanishes into the darkness of the lower 21 or 18 subplanes. Darkness. the lower 21 or 18 subplanes. 21 planes, subplanes, make the dense physical body of the solar logos. 18, I presume, the dense physical body of the planetary logos. That's darkness compared with the great light of the cosmic ethers. And of course, Venus has more to do with the higher mental plane in a way. Well, certainly Sirius does, and Venus is the agent of Sirius in a way. Venus is still polarized astrally, we are told, but on the sixth subplane from below, it's conquering the Buddhic subplane of the cosmic astral plane. So she disappears and vanishes into the darkness, or the light of mind is plunged into the irrational spheres, the undeveloped spheres of material response, there to grow, to germinate, eventually to express, and eventually to dominate the very field into which it was relatively helplessly immersed. Esoterically, she disappears from view and vanishes into the darkness. Neptune, the expression of the, I want to say an expression, the expression of the sixth ray of idealistic devotion, is naturally rendered more impotent in this sign. And simultaneously his power is lessened. But, of course, we will only consider Neptune being rendered more impotent in this sign if we consider Virgo only as related to the third aspect of divinity. So the great sensitivity of Neptune would be curtailed by the material processes. But, of course, to the extent that we find Virgo responding to its increasingly second-ray conditioning, we will find sixth-ray, second-ray Neptune able to express within its confines. So remember, every detriment is really a kind of rulership. Every fall is really a kind of exaltation. We can turn everything on its head here, I think, and look at things from the opposite perspective and gain insight thereby. Neptune is even a veiled esoteric ruler of Virgo. So it is at first more impotent in relation to material processes, but later its nature is reinforced or accentuated by the increasingly second-ray, fourth-ray, sixth-ray nature of Virgo. So for highly developed people, Virgo and Neptune might say a lot about the growth of the Christ principle and its longing to express. But at first, it's naturally rendered more impotent in this sign, and simultaneously its power is lessened. Now, what is this called? A detriment. For the drive and urge of devotion and desire give place in this powerful sign, ancient and powerful, and long habituated to its third-ray nature, to the natural processes of form production, and to the silent activity which is going on in the womb of time and space. So this is certainly a delay in the gratification of the longing. Neptune longs for expression and for the maturity and expression of the Christ principle, but it's going to take a good long Vulcanian time for matter to come around in such a way that it's possible for the desire of all nations, which I want to connect with Neptune here, is able to express through that Virgo field. Anyway, he's giving us an idea here of the normal detriment of Neptune in Virgo. Remember, though, that Neptune fell. It's one of the planets to fall in Capricorn, which means it must be exalted along with Jupiter in Cancer. If something falls in one sign, it's exalted in the opposite sign. So we know that Jupiter is exalted in Cancer. We don't hear much about its fall in Capricorn, but it is. And Neptune, since it falls in Capricorn, must be also exalted in Cancer. When a constellation is operating through its third aspect processes, planets which are pretty much on the second aspect, find their love and desire nature confined, restricted, and surmounted by other processes. But if transformation can occur in that field of the third aspect so that it becomes more and more expressive of the second aspect, then these planets can find a more congenial field of expression. This is happening with Neptune in relation to Virgo. After all, as stated, that Moon, veiling Vulcan, and Neptune shows us how important is this germinating Christ principle in the womb of matter esoterically. Neptune is closely related to Virgo, especially to the esoteric part of Virgo, which begins to express after, well, millions of years, and when the man becomes an aspirant. Jupiter, again, you see, DK is really pointing out here the difference between esoteric and exoteric astrology. In other words, or we can gather from what is said about these rulerships that there are significant differences between exoteric and esoteric astrology. Because what applies in exoteric astrology is seen to be contradicted from a more esoteric perspective. See, at first we're going to see that Jupiter is somehow detrimented in Virgo, Virgo being the opposite sign of Pisces, where Jupiter rules. So Jupiter, in spite of its latent power, and let's just say here associated with its hierarchical rulership of Virgo, is also lessened, detrimented, diminished. Lessened in influence at this time because of the second principle, the second aspect of divinity, the Son, or the germ of the Christ, who will come, the Son of Mind, descends into the depths and is temporarily veiled or hidden. The whole idea of pregnancy, veiling, hiding, protecting, nurturing that which is to emerge is a great theme in Virgo. So when a planet connected with the second aspect, well, all of these planets, the three planets connected with the second initiation, Venus, Jupiter, and Neptune, all of them connected with the second aspect. Even Venus, which he calls pure love wisdom, not emphasizing the fifth ray part of it, when those planets descend into the depths of Virgo, the material depths, they are veiled or hidden. They do not easily express their true nature. So, so his power is lessened because the second aspect is descending into the depths. So, what is the principle here? You know, you say something easy in a way. What is true of a planet at one time is not necessarily true of that same planet later. And at another evolutionary level. I would recommend this to the astrologers of the future. I would recommend to the astrologers of the future a careful investigation of the falls, exaltations, and diminutions, and the diminution of power which takes place within any zodiacal sign. But I would say, you know, it is time-dependent. Time-dependent. Because tied to the evolutionary level of the being considered as influenced by a planet. So, you know, the exaltation of, well, let's just say, there's a sense in which the fall of Venus in Virgo is really a great triumph later. Because Venus comes to dominate that lower scene, complete soul infusion, and this is reflected in the exaltation of Venus in the opposite sign, Pisces. Well, in astrology, you can make a statement and then reverse that statement in a different time context and have it make sense. So, there's a wonderful book on Falls and Exaltations by Monique Pommier. She is a wonderful writer on astrology, very insightful. And I would recommend that you get in touch with her about her book. There's really nothing quite like it, the way she writes of these things. So, a careful investigation of the falls, exaltations, etc. The whole problem must be viewed in a large manner. And this is what DK is giving to us. Not the strictly personal manner of personal astrology, where we're interested in our personal faith, but much more where we're interested in our spiritual development and in the development of the group of which we are a part, in the development of humanity, which we seek to serve. The whole problem must be viewed in a large manner and not so specifically. He's not saying you shouldn't, but not so specifically from the angle of personality horoscopes. We need to consider the being as being something much greater than strictly a personality. When the planets are rightly related to the rays, which they are expressing, are they emitting or transmitting? Anyway, they are expressing these rays, then the wider theme of the soul's life will emerge. Now, most astrologers, so many of the exoteric line, are not thinking particularly of rays when they look at planets, but we who study this subject as DK has presented it cannot help but think of every planet in terms not only of the ray given, but of rays hinted and of rays probable with every single planetary life. All the lives in our solar system and beyond are ruled by rays, and even if not all are given, some can be inferred. And then a much fuller understanding of what a planet is and what it is intended to accomplish spiritually in the life of man will be forthcoming. So even though it may be frustrating at first to view these matters in a large manner because the personality resists having attention taken away from itself. You know, like people will say, well, all that's very interesting, but what about me? Okay. Well, which me? And it just betrays the level of identification and encourages the individual to change that level of identification. If something really spiritual is to begin progressing in the life. So what about the larger me, who ends up being the group, ends up being humanity, ends up being the planet? What about me in that sense? What about me, the one? It takes a little work to think of oneself as the one, and a lot of self-sacrifice, a lot of taking the eyes off the little personal self. One has to cultivate that, because otherwise, instinctively, consciousness reverts to thinking about me, the personality. So, you know, it takes a while to wean astrological thinking away from doing strictly personal horoscopes. What you can begin to do is do personal horoscopes in which the soul influences are detected, And their working out turns out to be the most important factor to be emphasized in such horoscopes. That's a step. And eventually will come the step of working out the horoscope of the soul on the higher mental plane and seeing how it can most effectively express through horoscopes not only of the outer man on the physical plane, but of the astral man and the mental man and so forth. There are many different layers to the interpretation of horoscopes from the spiritual point of view. And we're just in the infancy here, mostly because we don't conceive of ourselves, really, with any technical accuracy as being spiritual beings. We still, for all our study of the spiritual side of astrology, still think of ourselves in personal sense. And I've, you know, it takes a long time. I've seen people who have studied esoteric astrology for years, then they go to interpret a chart and they absolutely revert to the normal personality horoscope interpretations, forgetting the esoteric implications. When people begin to live more, however, consciously as a soul, then the kind of astrology which must be used will keep pace with their new level of identification. So then when the planets are rightly related to the rays which they are expressing, then the wider theme of the soul's life will emerge. We have to change our conception of ourselves and see ourselves as a trans-incarnational being, something beyond this single incarnation. We have to begin to get a sense of ourselves, what we have been, how we have moved into the present condition, what we are moving towards in terms of our future incarnational expression. Then the wider theme will emerge. These condition the personality, but not in the same sense as material circumstance, physical body and material environment, condition the mass of men. So all of life is governed by these external instinctual environmental conditions when it comes to the mass consciousness. Yes, the personality will be conditioned, but it will be conditioned in terms of its improvement to affect spiritual liberation. It is a different conditioning meant to produce spiritual liberation, and yet the cross of liberation. So the personality is actually an extension of the soul. It has to be brought into alignment with the soul, just the way an esoteric ray ruler subsumes the orthodox ruler, so the soul subsumes the personality as its instrument and not as something contradictory to its intentions. So the conditioning of the rays of the planets lead the personality into an improved state of responsiveness to the soul, and this we want to help engineer. The conditioning of the mass of men is purely a limitation. So mass conditioning is purely a limitation. And many men cannot move beyond it and out of it. It establishes certain rhythms in the personality which are truly resistant to what the soul would produce if it could begin to influence in a conscious way the mass consciousness. So we have to ponder on this. We pondered a little. There's more to ponder. There's an unconscious habit nature which is reinforced by planetary conditioning and ray conditioning. But this is not the same as the reconditioning, let's call it that. Actually, what must happen is that the personality must be reconditioned by the planets and their rays. And when we're on the path of probation, the path of aspiration, this reconditioning can begin to occur. Now we are getting, it seems, into the question of the decanates. And this means that we are going to call forth other charts which will help us here. What I see is that we are pretty much at the end of this third hour of discussion. Just a few minutes left to go. I hesitate to begin discussing the decanates. It's going to be such a unit in itself, and it usually takes two programs. So this would be the end of our Esoteric Astrology 87, which would have three programs, page 282, and beginning tomorrow, I hope, with Esoteric Astrology, page 88, Esoteric Astrology Adventure, 282, Esoteric Astrology Adventure, 88. We've been dealing with a sign that we all have to grapple with, because we have to grapple with matter. We are in a solar system which is still a non-sacred solar system. As Sirius is a, let's just say as Venus is sacred and Earth is not, as the soul is sacred and the personality is not, as Sirius is sacred, so our solar system is not. The reason is that matter form have not been overcome. And that the third aspect of divinity is still primordial and unusually conditioning and retarding the intentions which our solar logos has with the second solar system. So right here on Earth is the microcosm of what has to happen in the solar system, and even in our own individual lives we have a little microcosm of what must happen in our solar system. We, as soul, must overcome the backward pull of matter form. We're engaged in quite a conflict around that. And Virgo is one of those signs essential to the process of that conflict, because matter reigns by inclining us to move in directions which were well established long ago. We have to recondition that type of rotary motion until it becomes spiral cyclic. Well, Virgo is helping us do that. It is now being impressed or conditioned superiorly by two great rays which are in accord with the divine ray, I think it's sometimes called that, of our solar system, the second ray. It just takes time, and we're dealing with a process in the womb of time. And we're dealing with the necessary Vulcanian power to persist and to endure until it is accomplished. We're at a certain crisis on our planet right now with respect to materialism or the possibility of pursuing a more spiritual way. It's being worked out in politics and economics and religion and probably in every field, but those three particularly, as far as I can see. So the choice of how we will respond to this fundamentally material energy of Virgo is with us now. Will we allow matter to reign, or will we nurture and expand the Christ in us, which is the hope of glory? Will we recognize that we are not just matter alone, what we see, what we sense with our lower capabilities, but that we are as well the emerging Son of God and even God the Father, who is immanent within us as the Son? Will we recognize that? So we have to, this is such a powerful sign, and everywhere we are surrounded by the results of its processes. How will we treat matter and form? And in the Aquarian Age, which is said to release Virgo from her load, we may be given an opportunity to engage in a new type of spiritual materialism, the right use of matter for spiritual purposes, rather than being enchanted by it as if it were a reality. So, I will go on probably tomorrow. I have a little time these days, or I'm making it, to do the ongoing work. There's still a couple of hundred programs left to go, I guess. So I'd like to simply close with the Great Invocation. We're not using that at the end of every one of these hour sections, but periodically I'd like to do that and round off this section in which we've been discussing many aspects of Virgo and its relations. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men, let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men, may Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, so we get into the decanates of Virgo in our next discussion. We're working this out, Brett and I, so these reach you as soon as possible. There's some technical work that has to be done on them, and then they should reach you, and hopefully they are contributing to your studies, promoting ideas of value. Maybe you can take some of what I've said and find some of it informing and some of it filled with implication for things I haven't thought about, but perhaps you might. So we'll let it go then, and we'll come back shortly. Thank you, and we'll see you talking about the decanates of Virgo.